The following podcast contains advertising. To access an ad-free version of the Lawfare podcast, become a material supporter of Lawfare at patreon.com/lawfare. That's patreon.com/lawfare. Also, check out Lawfare's other podcast offerings, Rational Security, Chatter, Lawfare No Bull, and The Aftermath.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another live recording of Trump's Trials and Tribulations New York Trial Dispatch. Today is Friday, April 26th. I'm joined, of course, by Editor-in-Chief Benjamin Wittes and our legal fellow and courts correspondent, Anna Bauer. And everyone should know that Ben is recording from the Amtrak studio today. He's on the move. But I want to jump right in. This is the end of the first week, first real week, not including jury selection. I know there's been some back and forth about what day exactly it is of the trial. But Anna, what was the vibe like today? Was it, you know, a loose Friday? Is everyone exhausted after the first full week? What was it like this morning walking in?
Yeah, it was a pretty, again, things, people keep getting there later and later and later, and which is great for me because I get to wake up not at, you know, 4 or 5 a.m. So that was great, but things were good today. I actually got to finally meet some members of the public who are interested in going to the courthouse because I've been in the courtroom. Ben has been in overflow, and then we switched it up today. And so I got to meet some members of the public. There was a woman who is an attorney who, you know, is retired now, but she was there with her kids and they were really excited and interested to see it. They were interested in mock trial. And there was just another guy who just, you know, was like, I'm here for the history kind of thing. And so that was really neat because I just haven't had a chance yet to speak to people who have been coming to this trial. I also, Tyler, will say, you have met Cowboy Man. There's a man who goes like every day who's a member of the public who dresses in a cowboy hat and cowboy-like clothing. And he was there again today. And so I didn't get a chance to talk to him, though, because I want to know what the story is and why he wears the same cowboy outfit to court every day. So listeners of Lawfare, stay tuned. We will one day solve the mystery of the cowboy who shows up to Trump's trial every day in New York.
When I met him, he was quite polite, I got to say.
I will just add that on my way into the perimeter, I flashed my Lawfare press pass at one of the cops who was manning the barricades. And he broke into a big smile and said, oh, I'm a daily listener. And I'm also a listener of the Bulwark podcast. And he was a big fan of Lawfare's work. And so shout out to the NYPD officer who listens to Lawfare and guards the perimeter of the court.
That's funny. Just one more comment on that. When I was in the court last week or a few days ago, I had my Lawfare lanyard and a member of the public stopped me and said, Lawfare. And I was so excited to meet a reader or a listener. She said, Lawfare, that's exactly what they're doing to Trump.
Yeah, well, he keeps he keeps bleeding that.
Mm-hmm. Well, and also we should say shout out to the listener who showed up at court because he heard us talking about the line situation and thought to himself, hey, I could just go and hang out at the Trump trial for a day. And so he did. And we got to meet him and it was great. So shout out to that listener. And if you do end up showing up at the courthouse, look out for us and say hi.
I will say, though, at the end of that,
doors open up on the right.
At the end of the day, I said to him, how'd you like it? And he said, one day is enough for me.
Well, one day is not enough for the three of us. So Anna, let's get right into it. Remind us again where we left off yesterday and where did we pick up today? I think at this point quite impressed now with David Pecker's, not only his candor, but also his endurance. This is, I think, was his fourth day up there on the stand. So where did we leave it and where did we start today?
Yeah, so we left off with the cross-examination of David Pecker, which we discussed yesterday in our dispatch, and it wasn't entirely clear exactly how far Trump's attorney, Emile Bove, had gotten into his cross-examination. But today we had been, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think it was about 2-3 hours of cross-examination still. Maybe two from Emile Bove, Trump's attorney. I think the main things that he was attempting to do today was try to attack Pecker's credibility on a number of fronts. So one way that he tried to do it was to focus on some potentially inconsistent prior statements that Pecker had made. Pecker has had interviews with federal investigators as well as state investigators over a number of years. And so there were a few things that Bove really wanted to kind of focus on there. The issue for him with that is that many of those things that he thought were inconsistencies or were trying to elicit as inconsistencies were in fact entirely, you know, kind of marginal, not material, or just explainable in terms of, you know, a slip of a memory or a contextual kind of issue. So, for example, he tried to point out this inconsistency between these FBI notes said when Pecker went and interviewed with the FBI. There is a report that was made by the FBI in which they kind of transcribed, you know, their notes from that interview, but it wasn't a transcript of the interview itself. And so Bove tried to, you know, use that report as a way of saying, well, you testified yesterday at this meeting at Trump Tower that Trump thanked you for what you did with, paying off the doorman who had the story about, alleged illegitimate child. And he thanked you for the Karen McDougal hush money payment in which, you know, Karen McDougal wanted to come forward maybe didn't want to come forward, but did receive funds for her life rights related to a story about Trump. So, there was this inconsistency that he was trying to point out in which the FBI notes did not mention that Pecker had said, you know, Trump thanked me at this Trump Tower meeting for the doorman story and for the Karen McDougal story. And in fact, the notes said something like, Trump never, you know, thanked Pecker or AMI for anything that they had done. And Pecker, you know, really kind of pushed back on that and basically said, well, you know, I didn't write those notes. I'm not responsible for what the FBI has written in this report. But, you know, I know what I have testified to and what I was, you know, told in that meeting and what I recalled, and it is true. And so there were things like that where it was kind of, you know, there were ways that they were trying to, impeach him but through these inconsistent prior statements, but it just didn't work. And it also seemed to have diminishing marginal returns. The more times that he pressed it, I think probably the less effective it was. And so it got to a point where, you know, jurors, like, they're like anyone where they don't want to be in court all day. And there's a point that it gets to where it just gets a little bit tiring. And I think that maybe, I can't see into their minds, but I could imagine that they might have been a little bit frustrated that it felt like he was pressing a few points there that seemed to just not really be material to the case. So then there were other issues, though. He tried to also elicit some testimony about, you know, that was priming the jury to for attacks on Michael Cohen's credibility, because Cohen is expected to be a key witness in the case. He asked Pecker about this comment that Ben and I discussed yesterday, in which, according to Pecker, Cohen said to Pecker at one point, you know, why are you worried about, you know, this federal investigation? Trump has Jeff Sessions as the AG, and he has Jeff Sessions in his back pocket. And so Bove tried to elicit testimony, which he said, but you knew that wasn't true. And Pecker said, yes, I knew that wasn't true, that Jeff Sessions was in Trump's back pocket. But that's why I remained worried. And so then, you know, Bove said, and you know from that, for example, that Michael Cohen is prone to exaggeration. And Pecker did admit that, yeah, Michael Cohen is someone who exaggerates thing. So that was another angle where, you know, they're trying to prime the jurors to expect that Michael Cohen is someone who's a liar and exaggerator and that kind of thing. And then finally, the other thing that I will mention, and there's a lot that maybe Ben has to add on this if he's if the Amtrak studio is working. But the other thing, too, is that it was just this consistent theme of, you know, trying to get Pecker to admit that there were reasons that AMI would have engaged in any of these hush money schemes, whether it's the doorman or Karen McDougal. They were trying to get Pecker to admit that, you know, there were business practice or business interests that were at play that would have, you know, come into play there as to why they would engage in these kind of hush money payments that didn't have anything to do with the campaign, because that's one of the core theories behind this case, is that it had to do with an intent to conspire to elect a candidate to office through unlawful means. And so that's kind of why they're really on cross-examination with Pecker, trying to get Pecker to admit that, yeah, there were business interests that didn't have anything to do with, you know, electing Donald Trump to office. So that was, again, heard a lot of Bove using this term standard operating procedure. It's going to come up in closing arguments because he used it over and over and over again, where he said, you know, that's just standard operating procedure in the tabloid industry, right? And so I guarantee you that term will come up in closing arguments. But Ben, what did I miss?
Yes, I'd make 3 points. The first is that Bove's cross-examination, the effectiveness of it was inversely proportional to its length. Yesterday, he started out, I thought, very strong, and he made some really interesting and valid points about the similarity between this behavior on the part of Pecker and AMI and in the Trump case and in a lot of other cases. Tiger Woods, Rahm Emanuel, Arnold Schwarzenegger, he's buying and killing stories for all of them. The second is, but then as the day goes on today, he really starts getting into these picayune disputes, as Anna describes, with the witness about prior inconsistent statements that might not be that inconsistent, points that are so minor that even if he's right, it's just not clear that he's not boring the jury to death rather than convincing it of anything. And then a bunch of areas in which he actually, Pecker, stands his ground. Anna mentioned one of them, this instance in which, you know, he's relying on an FBI 302. And Pecker just says, you know, I didn't say that. I can't be responsible for how they wrote up the 302. That's not what I said. And this sets up a devastating moment on redirect where Steinglass cites him all the contemporaneous times that he testified in a fashion consistent with the way he's testifying now from that period. And it becomes clear that the text of the 302 is actually something of an outlier. And every time he says to him, was that true then? And he says, yes. And is it true now? Yes. And so I actually think Bovey, by overextending a little bit, actually strengthened the witness in some important ways after landing some punches on him yesterday. The final point that I'd make, which is just that Steinglass's redirect was extremely effective. It was very brief, and he really rehabilitated him on the key point, which was to try to emphasize the difference between this sleazy set of tactics for Trump that AMI had engaged in and the superficially similar behaviors that he's done for others. And he, you know, he really brought out from him how this case was different, how he'd never done anything like this before, either in terms of the amount of money he'd spent or in terms of doing it with very, very specific political motivation or taking editorial direction from the candidate, giving them front views and basically turning over editorial control to the campaign. And I think it really did come off at the end of the day as, you know, Bovey had boviated a lot. But at the end of the day, I think Steinglass really did get from the witness that this was different. It was an agreement. It was cooperative with the campaign, and it was, whether in a legal sense or not, quite corrupt.
I know that, Anna, the past few days when you've been in the courtroom, you didn't quite get much from the jury besides maybe one juror looking a bit bored. Ben, if we still have you, I'm curious if you got any read on some of the jurors, either during the cross that seemed to drag on or the devastating redirect, as you said.
Well, they were very alert for the redirect. I was kind of nodding off during some of the boviating. And so I'm not sure I would have noticed if they were in and out as well. No, jokes aside, I actually think they're an alert bunch, and they're following things with a lot of interest. And, you know, who knows what they're taking from it, but they are following it.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/ACAST and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/ACAST.
We're going to keep moving. We have two more witnesses. So I think at long last, Mr. Pecker got a bit of a rest and he was relieved from the stand. Who was next, Anna? Did it surprise you who the next person was? Who was this person and how do they fit into the story?
Yeah, so the next person, you know, it was kind of unclear who they were going to call as the second witness. It could have been, you know, Hope Hicks. It could have been Michael Cohen. It could have been Stormy Daniels. But instead, what they chose to do was go with document witnesses. So people who were able to, you know, within the rules of evidence, there are things that you have to do to get certain documents into evidence because, you know, there are different rules of admissibility. Sometimes you have to just have someone, for example, from a company who's able to come and say, like, yes, these are records that we kept within our normal business practices. Yes, I, you know, recognize this. I'm, you know, it's something that we did all the time. time. Like, there's different things you have to ask just to get these records in through the witness. And so that's exactly what they did, where they had a woman named Rona Graff, who was Trump's longtime executive assistant and then ultimately became a senior vice president within the Trump organization. She worked at the Trump organization for 34 years. So she's someone, you know, her office there was right next to Trump. So she is someone who has been there a long time, is very knowledgeable of the business practices. As a part of her role as Trump's one of his, you know, primary executive assistants, she was in charge of his calendar and, you know, putting contacts in his phone and that kind of thing. So they called her as the second witness. She was a very competent, seemed to be, you know, very intelligent, came across very well. She testified that she was actually there under a subpoena and that her attorneys who were there present in the courtroom with her were attorneys who were being paid by the Trump organization itself. She said that she had, you know, no personal knowledge or personal things to add in terms of the facts of this case other than the documents that the prosecution was putting in front of her. They included things that were emails that showed basically that, you know, and contacts as well. Trump had contacts in his phone of Karen McDougal and Stormy Daniels. Although I will say the contact for Stormy, all that it was filed under was just Stormy and a phone number. And then also there were these contacts or scheduling kind of events within the Trump organization calendar that she was able to authenticate. And they showed that Trump was working in Trump Tower from the dates of January 17th to January 18th of 2017. And then he left New York to go to D.C. for his inauguration on the 19th of January in 2017. We also got from Rona Graff, though, a little bit more than just the documents. And that was that she was able to testify to the fact that she saw Stormy Daniels at Trump Tower sometime around 2015. I actually, that fact to me and Ben, I don't know if it was for you, but I don't know that that was a known fact. I'm not entirely sure how that fits into the story, but it seemed to be something, and speaking to reporters who were around me, it seemed like people were maybe not fully aware of, you know, how this detail fits into everything, but...
Did she explain why Stormy Daniels was there? Did she venture to guess?
No, it was just that she did say that she had a vague memory of Stormy Daniels being at Trump Tower in 2015. So it wasn't a total, you know, it was a moment where she was saying, yes, I vaguely remember seeing her in the waiting room at Trump Tower. And then on cross-examination from defense counsel, she was asked a lot of questions about, you know, Mr. Trump, who has started his reality TV show, The Apprentice, right? And those kinds of things that went down the thread of, you know, The Apprentice. And that ultimately led to questions about, was it your understanding that the reason Stormy Daniels was at Trump Tower in 2015 is because Mr. Trump was interested in having her on The Apprentice as a contestant. And Rona Graff said, yes, that was my kind. She said she had like an assumption that that was what it was. So it wasn't a fully, you know, certain testimony. She was very kind of like, oh, well, there was office chatter about Stormy, maybe, you know, Mr. Trump being interested in her being on The Apprentice. And so when I saw her in Trump Tower, I just assumed that that's why she was there. So that was very interesting. And again, I'm not entirely sure how yet this Stormy Daniels meeting will come into play. But some other things that they also asked her about is things like, for example, we had David Pecker's testimony in which he said that there were times when Trump he saw Trump review invoices and checks in his office. And he specifically said, you know, Trump's assistant, Rona Graff, came in and gave him these checks and invoices. I watched Trump review these checks and invoices. That is a critical fact in a case that is about the falsification of business records. Whereas here, the defense on cross-examination of Rona Graff elicited testimony from her in which they were saying, but Mr. Trump sometimes reviewed checks and invoices when he was multitasking, maybe when he was on the phone. They were trying to show that, you know, there were times when Trump was just signing things because he was distracted and not really reviewing them. So that was Rona. Then the third witness we got was a man named Gary Farrow, who is a former banking executive at a company called First Republic.
He looks like a bouncer, though.
Oh, he does look like a bouncer, yes. And he was also a documents witness. Primarily, they went through, because of course a core part of this prosecution is the payment that Cohen made to Stormy Daniels. He did that by using an LLC. And so we went through, we haven't gotten all the way through Gary Farrow's testimony, but it was a kind of long, tedious direct examination by the prosecution thus far, in which they basically just got him to say, yes, those are the documents that you say they are, in which Michael Cohen was emailing me asking me to set up bank accounts for various LLCs. So we haven't gone much further than that, but it was the most kind of boring part of the day, I will say.
So ending with a whimper, not a bang. Ben, do you want to add anything to those the other two witnesses?
Yeah, so I think Farrow played a slight one additional role, which does not ameliorate how boring his testimony has been, which is that I think from the prosecution's point of view, it's very important to get everything that you're going to rely on Michael Cohen for from somebody else and from documents if you can, because you don't want to rely on the testimony of a convicted perjurer on key element facts more than you have to, particularly not uncorroborated. And so here, by getting Farrow to perhaps bore several jurors to death and certainly bore Anna to death, they did get a lot of these documents in that corroborate and establish that Cohen went and put together Resolution Consulting and put together Essential Consulting. And these are the, you know, these are the building block bricks of the of this case. And this is from the testimony of somebody who has no skin in the game, has no pro or anti-Trump dog in the fight. He's just a banker who served Michael Cohen in the private banking industry. So this is the spinach part of the case, you know, where you really are forcing the jurors to, you know, absorb a lot of documents, but they're the documents that are going to enable the prosecution to say, you don't need to rely, you don't need to believe Michael Cohen, just, you know, everything he's saying is supported by a document, everything he's saying is supported by a banker, everything he's saying is supported by, you know, Trump's own executive assistant. And I think that's going to be a very important set of building blocks to have put in place 2-3 weeks from now.
Ben, I actually have a quick question for you on the Rona Graff testimony. I was in the overflow room watching on a monitor. You were in the courtroom. Did you, it looked to me like Trump kind of got up when she was done testifying and tried to like maybe say something to her or to someone near her? Is that accurate, or was I misreading that, what was going on the monitor?
So there was a big burly courts security person exactly in the sight line between me and Donald Trump. And so what exactly he did when she got up out of the witness chair and walked out, I honestly don't know. Some of the press people who were sitting near me seemed to think he had turned around and in some kind of affectionate gesture grabbed her arm or patted her on the arm or something. They clearly have warm feelings toward one another. She was also walking with a cane actually cut quite a sympathetic figure in my view. And so in his, you know, feral reptilian way, I think he noticed that this was somebody who the jury would be sympathetic with. And, you know, there was some kind of gesture, but precisely what it was, I don't know.
Yeah, that was what I saw as well, but I'm not entirely sure what to make of it. So I just wanted to ask, but thank you for that insight.
So now that David Pecker is gone, I don't know if Ben has much to look forward to, but Anna, looking forward to next week. What are you going to be watching for? And remind us when we're back in court. I believe we're not on Monday, but we're back Tuesday for a full day. So briefly, what are you looking forward to next week?
Right. So no court on Monday, but we will be back on Tuesday for the trial. We also had a Tyler, correct me if I'm wrong, because I feel like this hearing has moved so much. And so you will know, but the hearing that was supposed to happen on Wednesday was moved to Thursday, which is the contempt hearing for those three or four additional violations of the gag order that the prosecution raised regarding some of Trump's statements about Michael Cohen and others. We have that. I don't know the order of witnesses, and neither does the defense. One of the interesting things apparently about the way that they do it in New York is that, and also in some other states as well, is that, you know, it, as a courtesy, very often it's the night before that you learn that, who the next witness will be, but, it's something that apparently they have not done in this case because of reasons related to concerns around, you know, Trump tweeting about it and that kind of thing. But I don't know the order of witnesses. I will be very curious to see the testimony of, for example, people that we expect to testify, like Hope Hicks, Michael Cohen, Stormy Daniels, Karen McDougal, people that are on the expected witness list. But we just don't know when they will testify. We could get some more documents, witnesses, who knows? So we'll see. Stay tuned.
Stay tuned indeed. Well, that's a wrap on week one of the People of the State of New York v. Donald Trump. Anna Bauer and Benjamin Wittes, thank you very much for joining me.
Thanks, everyone.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.